KALW.
My grandparents saved a generation of children, and I tell Steph Curry to shoot the ball from 30 feet out.
Golden State Warriors head coach Steve Kerr is an NBA champion, but his grandparents actually saved lives.
They had an awareness of what was going on in the world and the atrocities that were happening in Turkey and Armenia.
We'll hear the story of how Kerr's grandparents helped thousands of orphans during the Armenian genocide. Then we meet a living legend from San Francisco's Chinatown, Dorothy Kwok.
By the time I was in maybe the third grade, I learned how to run the machine that did the embossing of the copper rivets.
And we'll hear a reading from Vallejo author Kellyanne Parker. That's coming up. I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. With our Golden State Warriors back in the playoffs, we've been revisiting KALW's award-winning podcast, Bounce. It tells the story of the Warriors franchise and the many people whose lives are entwined with the team and its fate. You may have heard Warriors head coach Steve Kerr's passionate call for action in response to the tragic school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. In light of that, today we're doing something different. First, an update from the host of Bounce, Ben Trefney.
This episode could have been about the play of the playoffs.
Ben snaps it outside to Wiggins. Goes by Bullock. Oh! Drops the sledgehammer!
Golden State's emerging superstar Andrew Wiggins dunked on Dallas's best player, Luka Doncic.
I've got to see this again. Oh, that's a poster.
Just feeling the energy. You know, that was the main thing. When I seen the rim, that's all I seen.
Wiggs' big three teammates talked him up after the game.
He's just been aggressive all around all playoffs, and it's been great to see him. It's obviously been huge for our team.
Put pressure on the rim. Like, we don't have that much vertical threat, you know, with other guys that we have, and he can provide that when driving lanes are there. You see him just attack the rim.
He was, you know, looking like Dominique Wilkins out there with the dunks he was throwing down.
Doncic himself had something to say about the iconic moment.
I saw the video again, I was like, oof. That was pretty incredible, and I wish I had those bunnies.
Wiggins' springy bunnies helped the Dubs to a commanding 3-0 lead in the best-of-7 Western Conference Finals, one win away from a return to the NBA Finals for the 6th time in 8 seasons, playing the beautiful game we all got used to, playing with joy. And then, suddenly, the vibe changed. 2 days later, on the morning of Game 4, a teenager in Uvalde, Texas, entered a school with a rifle and opened fire in a classroom. Reporters, including Vanessa Croy from Ken's 5 TV in San Antonio, went live to Robb Elementary.
This is a very difficult scene out here. It's difficult for me, and I am not sure exactly what happened yet, but I can just tell from the faces of these law enforcement here, this is a very difficult scene for them to deal with. It's difficult for me to see them. I'm a former teacher, and just pulling up and knowing what these families are feeling right now is heartbreaking.
Shortly after, with information still coming in, Warriors coach Steve Kerr sat down for a pregame press conference in Dallas.
I'm not going to talk about basketball. Nothing's happened with our team in the last 6 hours. We're going to start the same way tonight. Any basketball questions don't matter. Since we left shoot around, 14 children were killed 400 miles from here. And a teacher. And in the last 10 days, we've had elderly black people killed in a supermarket in Buffalo. We've had Asian churchgoers killed in Southern California. And now we have children murdered at school. When are we going to do something?
Kerr slammed the table in front of him. His face shook with emotion. He's been one of the most outspoken people in sports on issues of gun control, for good reason. In 1984, his father was assassinated while serving as president of the American University of Beirut. Kerr has used his platform as a celebrated sports figure to advocate for gun control before. This time, he called out politicians to do more.
I'm fed up. I've had enough. We're going to play the game tonight, but I want every person here, every person listening to this, to think about your own child or grandchild or mother or father or sister, brother. How would you feel if this happened to you today? We can't get numb to this. We can't sit here and just read about it and go, well, let's have a moment of silence. Yeah, go Dubs, you know. Come on, Mavs, let's go. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go play a basketball game.
The video went viral.
It's pathetic. I've had enough.
And that night, just like after so many other tragedies, they did play a basketball game. The Warriors lost. The diversion of basketball felt a lot less important than it had just 48 hours earlier. But perhaps Kerr and his players recognized even more the influence their opinions and activism could have. This is Bounce, a show about the Golden State Warriors and their place in the Bay Area. I'm Ben Trefney. Steve Kerr is an 8-time NBA champion, 5 times as a player, and 3 as a coach. It's a very rare accomplishment. But Kerr himself would say the real heroes in his family are his grandparents. In a feature that originally aired in 2020, Sona Avakyan tells the story.
Please welcome to our KZV community the coach of the Golden State Warriors, Steve Kerr, and his family.
In the main hall of the KZV Armenian School on Brotherhood Way, Coach Steve Kerr spoke to an adoring crowd. Basketball fans and non-basketball fans cheered. Everyone there knew his grandparents, Stanley and Elsa Kerr, were the stars of the night. People like me, who are descendants of survivors of the Armenian Genocide, knew the names Stanley and Elsa Kerr before we ever knew the name Steve Kerr.
I found out quickly when I walked in here a couple of hours ago that it's good to be the grandson of Stanley and Elsa Kerr. Particularly if you also happen to be the Warriors coach. And you find yourself in San Francisco in a room full of Armenians. So I lucked out tonight.
Just after World War I, Stanley Kerr, the son of a minister from Pennsylvania, and Elsa Reckman, who was from Ohio, arrived separately in the Middle East. Both were in their early 20s and were horrified by news reports on the Armenian Genocide, in which 1.5 million Armenians were systematically killed by the Ottoman government.
Each one shared this spirit of adventure and recognized what was happening. They had an awareness of what was going on in the world and the atrocities were happening in Turkey and Armenia. And so they joined this relief effort, and that's where they met.
They married in Beirut in 1922. The young couple ran the Nahir Ibrahim Orphanage, caring for thousands of children who had lost or become separated from their families during the Armenian Genocide. And Armenians have been in love with the Kerr family ever since.
There's a huge Armenian population in Los Angeles,
which is where Steve Kerr grew up.
And it seemed like we had just a ton of Armenian friends. So they would frequently end up at our house or vice versa, and we'd barbecues. And I would hear stories from them about my grandparents.
In fact, lots of people heard stories about Steve Kerr's grandparents. One such person was Anahit Kachyan.
My father, Azad Kachyan, was born in 1908 in the city of Trabzon,
a city on the coast of the Black Sea in the country that is today known as Turkey. Then it was the Ottoman Empire, and it was not a safe place for Armenians, a Christian minority. Even in the few decades before World War I, hundreds of thousands of Armenians had been killed in a series of massacres. In 1915, when Anahit's father was a young boy, the Armenian Genocide began. That year, Azad's family tried to escape.
My grandmother kept telling her husband, "We must get out, we must get out. It's looking very, very bad." And he resisted. And then one day they decided they must go to the coast to leave, only to be told that they could not allow any more Armenians to depart. that the last Armenians left in the morning, and here they were arriving in the afternoon, and they were forbidden from boarding the ship and departing. And from then on, it was chaos.
In that chaos, Azad and his younger sister got separated from their parents and then from each other.
In time, he learned that his father had been shot right in the city and his mother was put on the march.
One of the deportation marches Armenians were put on. They usually ended in camps in the desert of Deir Zor in present-day Syria, where they were left to die. So many perished that as recently as 2002, you could easily find human remains. Azad himself was eventually forced on the march.
That went on till we think 1916, 17. He was still on the march. And in time, in the southeastern Turkey, World War I had ended, and the Americans were coming to help. And in fact, the Red Cross appeared, and my father quickly learned English. And we believe it's the Red Cross that brought the children to Beirut,
where Stanley and Elsa Kerr ran the Nahir Ibrahim Orphanage for Boys outside the city limits.
They were very good to him.
And because Azad spoke English,
the Kerrs would take him into Beirut offices when they had to do some formalities. And they would take him as a translator in case the Arab official was not able to converse logically.
In 1923, a malaria outbreak forced the orphanage to close. Some of the boys, including Azad, moved with the Kerrs closer to the city of Beirut, where he was able to attend high school classes. And when it came time for Azad to further his education,
Dr. Kerr came to him and he said, "What would you like to be studying? You can go to college, American University of Beirut." Dr. Kerr was a chemist, a PhD in chemistry. And my father told him, "I want to be a doctor." And so Dr. Kerr saw to it that he would be on track.
That was an excerpt of Sona's story, which first aired in 2020. She was a fellow in our 2019 Audio Academy training program. And a note, in 2016, Stanley and Elsa Kerr were posthumously awarded the Raoul Wallenberg Medal of Freedom for their work helping Armenian children. You can listen to the full story online at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. You've been hearing the profiles all month. May is Older Americans Month, and we've been celebrating with a series that profiles San Franciscans who are 80 and older. It's 80 over 80 San Francisco.
A lot of things have changed. A lot of things have not.
Old age is coming along, and I need to have the time to experience it.
Dorothy J.C. Kwok, also known as Polka Dot, is a San Francisco native. She grew up in Chinatown with her parents and eight siblings. Now she's busy splitting her time as an activist for social justice causes, a designer of her own clothes, a researcher for Good Medicine Pictures Company, and a Chinatown tour guide. On top of all that, she's also the subject of the documentary Becoming Polka Dot by James Q. Chan. She spoke with Angela Johnston for the 80 Over 80 Project. Here's Dorothy.
My formal name is Dorothy G. C. Kwok. And I was born in San Francisco Chinatown in 1934. And it was a difficult childhood because I have 7 siblings, parents illiterate, immigrant, poor, and it was tough because it was during the Depression as well. We could play in alleys and, you know, throw baseballs and do all kinds of activities without fear of traffic. Felt very safe. We would be out late at night. My mother had to help with income. So she would go down to the sweat factories in Chinatown to sew Levi jeans in the 1930s and 40s. And we preschoolers had to be dragged along with her, no babysitting. And so I learned how to use a pair of scissors as probably a 3-4-year-old to clip off the thread ends of Levi Strauss jeans, because that was one of the last steps before they pack it and send it out. And by the time I was in the 3rd grade, I learned how to run the machine that did the embossing of the copper rivets. And then as a 5th and 6th grader, I was promoted to run the buttonhole machine. You know, at that time, there's no zippers. It was 4 or 5 buttons down the fly. And I got 2 cents for every buttonhole that I could make. And so that was probably the beginning of being exposed to a craft that I began to enjoy doing. And because I was the 4th daughter, that meant I had a lot of hand-me-downs. Most of them didn't fit, but I had to somehow make it do. So I learned how to mend and alternate and hem and patch up holes. And so I don't buy clothes, hardly, but I always have that tendency to make it if I want something brand new. And also, in later decades, I realized this is part of being conscious of our environment, ecology, not be a throwaway to keep buying as a consumer and to use up the resources that our outfits take to be made, but to use them as long as they're still wearable, or to mend them even when they wear out. So this is part of my philosophy too, I've discovered, that it's not only an interest and a hobby, but also it stands for what I believe in terms of what life is all about, to conserve, to recycle, to remake, and that's part of creativity too, that challenges us to use what we have as resources, but to conserve it so that it be enough for succeeding generations.
That was San Francisco senior Dorothy Kwok interviewed for the 80 Over 80 San Francisco Project. The lead audio producer is Aussie Linus Goodman. Anna Chodos is the project director. And you can hear more at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we'll hear an author reading about the struggle to stay grounded when you're dealing with mental illness. It's another episode from KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Kellyanne Parker lives in Vallejo,
the beautiful little city by the bay.
Her chapbook, Down the Foggy Streets of My Mind, came out on February 2nd, 2022.
And it's about the journey of me living with dissociative identity disorder, which is known as DID. At the time that I was diagnosed 30 years ago, it was still called multiple personality disorder. And I decided to write the book to give people some real insight about what it's actually like to live with this and help to take away the stigma and the shame associated with severe mental illness. This is an excerpt from Instructions to Insulate from Moonlight. Remember to breathe as the sun starts to fade and paints clouds from below while anxiety grows into a flower named dread. Snapping photos to steal light, which I hide in my pocket to later conjure safety, but land. Land eludes me and I begin pacing in a rhythm. This is the dance of my culture. This is the dance of my youth while my feet lift off the ground. And so I float and spin with no handhold in sight, no means to make it stop until I'm swept up in the current.
That was Kellyanne Parker reading from Down the Foggy Streets of My Mind.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can hear more Bay Area authors reading from their new books at kalw.org/newarrivals. And here's some Bay Area music before we leave you. This is the band Redwood Roots, and they'll be playing in San Francisco at the Bottom of the Hill this Sunday. Today's Cross Currents team includes Jasmine Ramirez, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Shia Levitt, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet as interpreted by Dawood Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Put my heart in my hand.